This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. It's been 75 years since the Modern Art Society was created in Cincinnati. It wasn't until 1952 it took on the name Contemporary Arts Center. Since its first days in the lower levels of the Art Museum to its current home on 6th Street downtown, the CAC has been sharing art in Cincinnati. We'll talk about the history of the CAC and then a Contemporary Arts Center-sponsored performance of Red, Black, and Green, a Blues, which talks about race, class, culture, and the environment. But first, to join me to talk about the history of the CAC, our curator Stephen Maticio and research and program assistant Chris Purbix. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Marianne. Good
afternoon.
So the CAC, which was the Modern Art Society, was started by three women back in 1939. Tell us, Stephen, we'll start with you, a little bit about how in the world these three women started an art museum.
It's a fascinating story, and it's really one that I think shows this entrepreneurial spirit that just couldn't be kept down. These three women, they were firebrands. They wanted to make this happen. And so, like you say, they carved out this little space in the basement of the Cincinnati Art Museum, but then immediately looked to and made a relationship with Alfred Barr in New York, who was running the Museum of Modern Art at that time. And it was a very productive relationship because they immediately established a pipeline where they could start to import a lot of important modern art at that time. So immediately, it wasn't like the traditional startup where you start to try to, they were trying to find their footing, and yet they were showing these legends of art history almost immediately. And so I think that they established a footing and a foundation that obviously we've been able to grow upon for the past 75 years. And it's been tremendously exciting and a very profound experience.
How was it different from what the art museum had? You're putting an art museum in an art museum.
At that time, you know, they were really focusing upon, at that time, what was modern and contemporary was Picasso and was Matisse and Renoir and Van Gogh. And so they were looking at those kind of artists. And yes, the art museum did show or was interested in those kind of artists, but they're encyclopedic. And so they're looking at everything from the ancient to the modern. Whereas Peggy and the girls, they wanted to look at and focus exclusively on this modern and contemporary art and do so in a non-collecting way, which is always more of a challenge. You know, the Cincinnati Art Museum is very much about collecting and building this heritage, where the Modern Art Society was about the art of now and about the art of tomorrow. And so they immediately started carving out a niche within this larger encyclopedic context.
Now, Chris, you've been putting together this timeline it's fascinating on the website, and there's a link to it on our website, wvxu.org. But really, it shows just how every year and what major events happened in the history of the museum. What are some of the things that happened very early on that you'd like to share?
Well, there's a whole bunch of things, actually, that we can kind of start to talk to. And I think I'm glad that Stephen kind of brought up and mentioned and specified just where these three women were coming from. And just to add a little bit, they're coming at this situation when they're creating the Modern Art Society without any kind of graduate work. So when they're creating this institution, and you see that information and you pair it with the exhibitions that they begin to show and that they continue to show all the way through their, even through the 10th anniversary of the Contemporary Art Center, it's pretty amazing the names and the shows that they're capable of bringing in. The one that I personally kind of find myself drawn to is one of this early series in which they were trying to kind of engage Cincinnati with a discussion of modern art at the time. And it's this series of three modern sculptors and three modern masterpieces show. And the way that it was built was so that it create a kind of discussion where people would come in and view these three pieces, and then they would vote on what their favorite show was. I believe the modern masterpieces, which had a Renoir piece in it, for example, was shown first. But to kind of build off of this example that Stephen was mentioning, where the Contemporary Art Center is showing what is contemporary at the time, and to see how that can sometimes conflict with where Cincinnatians are. In the three modern sculptors show, while there were three different voting categories that you could cast your vote for, there were actually 11 votes cast against the entire show in general. So while you do kind of start to see the discussion beginning even from the very start. And I believe that was in about 1940. So it's right after things get kickstarted. The center is always kind of at odds and pushing the boundaries with what's going to be shown. And it separates itself from, even though it's in the space, it separates itself from the art museum.
Was there an audience for it? Did people really want to come see these works when they came to town?
I think that there was. You know, we're kind of looking back in time and trying to trace those audience records. But I think it shows that we are one of the oldest non-collecting contemporary art centers in the country. And so even though Cincinnati is sometimes branded as a conservative city, there was a larger public embrace that kept this thing going. Because, yes, there the three women were there. They started the fire and they wanted to initiate it. But there had to be some level of public embrace and public support to keep that going. And I think that they continue to build that larger critical mass and consensus as the years followed.
What's the next big step once the art museum was created? Chris, as you put together this timeline, what was the next major thing after they started that was a big deal?
I guess you could look at certain exhibitions and point to as a big deal. The way that I usually look at it is I look at it in terms of where the Contemporary Arts Center moves and which places it necessarily is housed in. So aside from some of the really big exhibitions, like a Picasso exhibit in, I think, about 1941, with the name change, the center also gets two permanent galleries around 52, 54 that are designed. So instead of kind of working around the Cincinnati Art Museum's schedule, the Contemporary Art Center, the center itself is renamed after the specific space that gets redesigned. So now they have two about 900 square foot galleries that they can choose to show their own exhibitions in without having to kind of dance around the schedule of another institution.
Why the name change, Stephen?
I think that modern art started to, these distinctions are always a little bit fuzzy. Where does modern begin and contemporary end and all of those things? But I think that modern art started to become more and more galvanized. It started to become an art historical moment. And I think that that's when they wanted to push and not be associated with art history, but rather the art of today. And so I think that precipitated that change of moving away, because modern art started to establish itself and it became part of what the museum's responsibility would be. And I think that that was the impetus to start to move into an exclusively contemporary art context.
You talk about the space it had once it moved out of the art museum, but it's been a number of places in town before the place it's located now, the new center. Tell us about where it's been.
Yeah, absolutely. So it began in the art museum itself, and it was, as I had previously mentioned, working around different gallery spaces within the museum. The permanent gallery spaces were going to be that. It was thought to be a pretty permanent space, and I believe about 1962 was when the construction on the Cincinnati Art Museum for the Emory Wing pushes the center out. And while the Contemporary Center, the Art Center's attitude towards the space was positive, this was kind of the impetus of change for looking downtown. So we can kind of see as we look back in the records and in the writings of the directors that downtown was where they wanted to put the center. So as some stepping stones to get to the Mercantile in 1971 on Government Square, there was a lot of temporary housing, sometimes a year at the Taft, the Crewe Tower also for some time, and then about six-ish years at the Women's Exchange Center before it finally gets to the Mercantile Center in 1970.
And there was a march, you could see, as ambitions continued to swell and accelerate for greater visibility. I think the Modern Art Society /CAC had always been part of another building. And then when in 2003, they wanted to make this very bold statement and sort of establish a level of autonomy, this is when Zaha Hadid and the Sixth and Walnut structure comes into being. But even at the Mercantile Center, you know, we were on the second floor, and so there wasn't that immediate level of visibility that I think that we all wanted. And so that's why in the new building, you get that whole glass curtain. It's about sort of inviting people, enticing people in to experience what contemporary art can be.
You mentioned that it was on the second floor when it was at the Mercantile Building. But one thing was always in front, and that was Metrobot. And I remember I was working at another station in town, but I remember writing the story or helping write this story when that first happened. It was a kind of a big deal when it came out. Where is it now and what's going on?
Yeah, it is currently in a state of being rehabilitated and renewed and repainted. And the plan is that we will relaunch it in September. So it will be part of our larger fall exhibition launches and really the culmination of this 75th anniversary year. But there's been a lot of people, there's a lot of friends of Metrobot. I have to say that I've gotten calls and emails from people very excited about it being resurrected because it had to move. It had to move from the Mercantile Center, and it's 26 feet tall, so it's difficult to store. So I had to say that it kind of got chopped down, but it's now being renewed and will be better than ever. As tall. And all the technology will be updated now. But it will still...
So no payphone anymore?
That was a big question. Should we have a working payphone? Should it be an audio piece of artwork? Should it be CAC promotional material when you pick up that phone? But we very much wanted to stay true to Nam June Paik's intentions for the piece. And so while some of the internal mechanisms will change, the overall character of the piece will very much stay intact.
So that means there will be a payphone downtown.
Maybe. Yeah, we can't promise it'll be working, but the phone will be there. Yeah.
Details to come. We're talking about the 75th anniversary of the Contemporary Arts Center and my guest, curator Stephen Maticio and research and program assistants Chris Purbix. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. I want to remind you that if you have a story you'd like to tell from the early days of the Contemporary Arts Center, we'd love to hear that as well. Again, 513-419-7100. It's difficult to talk about the Mercantile Library or the Mercantile Center and the Contemporary Arts Center without mentioning the Mapplethorpe exhibit. That was probably one of the most prominent times for the museum. For people that weren't around or don't remember, Stephen, can you fill us in?
Yeah, very much. I think it was a lightning rod in the life of the Contemporary Arts Center. The exhibition was called The Perfect Moment. It happened in 1990, and so we're actually coming up on the 25th anniversary of that exhibition and that moment, which we'll be addressing in our year of exhibitions. But at that time, Mapplethorpe was already establishing his reputation as a very important contemporary artist and someone that was pushing the borders of both photography as well as what could be represented in photography. And the director at that time, Dennis Berry, knew that this was going to be a provocative, button-pushing exhibition. This was not going to fly under the radar. But he wanted it to be a moment when people would have to confront contemporary art. And I think it was a polarizing moment when some people... You know, as we're collecting stories and evaluating histories, we know and we're receiving that information that this was a polarizing moment. Some people fell in love with the CAC, some never came back after that show. But I think it was very important. And when we look back now, 25 years later, it was a landmark moment in the culture wars, in the greater landscape of art and politics, the questions around free speech and sexuality and censorship. All of those things all culminated in that show. And so it brought very important issues to the forefront. But it also was, you know, it was a moment when people were very frightened and yet also people were curled around the block waiting to get into that show. And so I think that it was a very defining moment in the organization's history.
Was it the most attended show ever still? Or do you have others that have drawn that kind of crowds? That kind of a crowd?
That is a good question. I'm not sure if we have specific numbers to back it up. We do know that in the short term, it caused just an amazing spike in the attendance and in specific donations.
Exactly, yeah. And so there was a whole Mapplethorpe defense fund that came around when it did go into trial and Dennis Berry was charged with obscenity charges and all of that. You know, it brought together some very passionate support for this to happen and this to continue. And yes, the exhibition was shut down for a short period, but then it reopened and was back better than ever. And you know, next year when our exhibitions, we're going to be looking at the enduring legacy of that moment and how it continues to reverberate and resonate all these years later and is still so prominent, I think, in artists' consciousness.
Is it possible to bring an exhibit like that back? Is it gone? I mean, I realize, you know, contemporary art is not, you don't own it, so...
Exactly. Like those pieces now, they, I'm sure, are spread around the world. It would be, obviously, it would be possible to reunite and bring that show back. But I think that we're more interested in how that legacy has mutated and manifested itself. So rather than bring back those exact works, we're really interested in how they've embedded themselves into artists and people's and communities' memories and how those memories have sort of mutated over those years. And so we want to address Mapplethorpe, but in a more indirect way, because I think that just bringing those direct pieces back may not push the dialogue or expand the dialogue as we really want it to.
Were you even alive during all of that?
I would have been right born on that, yes. So that's how I was brought
in. What is your memory of it, just having heard of it strictly as a historical event?
Well, I guess the way that I'm kind of looking at it is colored by the research that I've done. And I honestly, it's shocking to say I've been in Cincinnati my entire life. But when I look at the actual event, working at the Contemporary Arts Center, this was the first time that I had really seen it as more than just a highlight or a headline or a blurb. And the way that I've looked at it and the way that my research has sort of unfolded is as kind of a frame of how the Contemporary Arts Center moved. So when we want to talk about or continue this discussion of where the Mapplethorpe exhibition and the pieces has taken our understanding of contemporary art, I think the center and the architecture itself is what I've kind of latched onto of the new center, because it was this event, the Mapplethorpe exhibition, whether it was, you know, positive or negative in whoever's minds, that lets the Contemporary Arts Center look towards its own first freestanding building. So when Stephen was mentioning some of the struggles of the Mercantile Center being on the second floor, when you get that kind of importance and that kind of information gathered and being the focus of that kind of attention at the Mapplethorpe exhibition, since the Contemporary Arts Center was able to kind of look forward to its own specific building.
And I think that the perfect moment also speaks to a larger metaphor of the nature of the work that was in that exhibition, because I think it provides an interesting microcosm of what contemporary art can be and what the CAC has presented. Because in that exhibition, there were moments of intense beauty. There were moments of classical beauty and sort of sculpture and flowers, and it really shows the aesthetic proclivity of Mapplethorpe. And then all the way to the other end of the spectrum with work that is aggressive and unsettling and challenging. And we try to honor that legacy by showing all of those things and everything in between. You know, we want people to be entranced, to be mesmerized, to fall in love with work. But we also want to present shows and work that is slightly unsettling and challenging and disquieting, because in that way it can start to open up new perspectives and understandings. It pushes you out of your comfort zone, out of your typical perspectives and understandings. And in that moment, you can start to absorb new ideas. And so I think in a lot of ways that Mapplethorpe show, it did start to set the landscape of what we've done since and past.
Tell us what you're doing next, the Memory Palace. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it because this is connecting really well with what Chris is discovering in the archives. Because the Memory Palace is this Greco-Roman mnemonic device which prompted its user to remember by creating an imaginary architectural structure that you would then populate with a sequential set of memories. And so ideally you would walk through and you'd remember that whole path, and yet the process itself shows the dramatic renovation that human memory actually performs upon actual events, the way that it transforms, obscures, and redraws actual events into highly subjective renditions. And so that's the underlying foundation of this group exhibition called Memory Palace, where we're gathering an international coterie of artists that are dealing with very intense moments of personal history, global history, political history, and translating it through a very personal lens in the way that it becomes abstract, in the way that it becomes something else and yet is drawn from that history. But one of the pillars of that is this anecdotal, unofficial, kind of unwritten history. And that's what Chris is finding in our archives, because he and I are both drawn to the letters that we're finding. All the things that live outside of catalogs and official records, they are the more human histories that sometimes fall outside of those kind of codified official organizational records. And so he and I are really gravitating towards that. And then much of the summer and fall will be an effort to reach out to the community and to Cincinnati to welcome in people to share their stories with us. This is a moment when we want to become a gathering place and really absorb all of these stories, collect them, time capsule them, and then process some of them into actual artworks on display.
In just a short time that we have left, Chris, if you would talk a little bit about the letters you have found, what's the most interesting one of all of the ones that you found?
Oh, gosh. Well, we have the one, I guess, that we focus in on or tend to focus in on a lot more is it's this office art history mystery that involved a 1945 show called Modern Art, or Modern Art and Advertising. And essentially the show that we get is coming from a Container Corporation and all of the artists who did work in their advertising for that. And we essentially, I had to reach out to the Smithsonian to figure out a little bit about this show because, it, as it turns out, the entire collection of this Container Corporation show was donated to them. And in a revision of the catalog, they revealed that one of the artists who I diligently input into this timeline and past exhibition list online that you can see, he was actually going by two other aliases, all of which happened to be in the Container Corporation catalog, and all who had biographies written for them in this specific show. So these biographies that I had been entering in turned out to be complete fabrications.
Oh my goodness.
Of artists whose varying levels of fame wasn't actually true.
A lot to learn and see with that history. And you can see that history line. We have a link to it on our website, WVXU.org. Thanks so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure.
It's been our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been great.
We've been talking about the history of the Contemporary Arts Center in Cincinnati on its 75th anniversary with CAC, our curator, Stephen Maticio, and research and program assistant, Chris Perbix.